Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
With a helicopter circling overhead, heavily armed agents stormed an apartment building.
And seen breaking down fences and doors to get inside.
Immigration authorities have not released specific charging information against anyone taken into custody.
The Broadview Police Department has opened a criminal investigation against ICE after agents allegedly fired chemical munitions at a TV reporter.
Both fire and police chiefs accusing the federal government of overstepping their bounds as local first responders have been among those incapacitated by the deployments.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop.
Most federal services came to a halt today, and thousands of federal non-essential workers are being furloughed as Senate Republicans and Democrats reached an impasse.
There are more than 153,000 federal employees in Illinois. Any shutdown will likely result in tens of billions of dollars in lost wages.
Breaking news, a large protest against ICE actions right now downtown.
And I told Pete, we should use some of these dangerous cities as training grounds for our military, National Guard, but military, because we're going into Chicago very soon. That's a big city with an incompetent governor. Stupid governor, stupid.
It's our weekly news recap, and those are some of the stories making headlines in Chicago this week. Every Friday, we bring you up to speed and give you analysis of the stories affecting our region. We'll get into the full conversation that you just clicked on in just a moment. But first, let's chat with WBEZ's senior editor, Alden Lowry. He joined me on today's panel, and he's here in studio right now. Hey, Alden.
Hey, Sasha.
Good to see you. Because there's so much happening this week, especially, you know, my devices, I don't know about yours, they've just been buzzing with all these breaking news alerts. And the country is really focused, I think, on Chicago right now. It's the city that we work in and we live in. But we're also seeing not just this focus nationally, but also ICE actions happening right before our eyes. I feel like we were preparing for it to happen, and now it's here, and I'm having trouble wrapping my mind around it. How are you digesting all of it?
My head is spinning. You know, this is, I think, the first time any of us have really kind of experienced this. There's all this talk about, you know, the National Guard and you know, ICE intervention, so on and so forth, but I don't think we really had an idea of what exactly to expect. But it's a lot. It's a whole lot. And it's happening, I think, for some of us who didn't think that it would be happening on our doorstep, you know.
It's definitely happening on our doorstep, because one of the stories we talked about today on the recap, Alden, was a shocking one. I think that's still puzzling to me. But ICE raids are happening on the south side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. People in South Shore were detained. They were segregated by age, gender, and race. What else can you share about this one?
This almost out of a movie, helicopters and people descending from the helicopter on top of the roof and so on and so forth. It's a building at 7500 South Shore Drive. I used to live in a building at 7447 South Shore Drive. It was some years ago, but I know that apartment building. It was like kitty corner from the apartment building that I was in. It was a high rise. So when I heard that, I thought to myself, who'd have thunk that this kind of immigration enforcement would happen there and would happen in such a grand and extravagant fashion. And it's reflective of how we are connected, even if we don't think we're connected, right?
Yeah, very true.
There's a story of the South Side, in some respects, and to some degree the West Side, changing as those communities have lost Black population. They've gained Latino population. And there have been many folks, Latinos, who've found those communities to be places to buy homes, to get affordable rental, So it's kind of a mismatch of those kinds of things, right, in addition to this current saga that we're seeing with regard to immigration enforcement. But it is also a way that we now see how we're connected, even if we didn't think that we were.
Yeah. You know? And you, as a lifelong Chicagoan and Southsider, Alden, I mean, what are you thinking when you're covering these stories? You're the data guy, right? And so you're also helping reporters pull together the numbers and really kind of seeing the impact of this.
Yeah. Well, just in general, all of this is incredibly wild. I think of George Orwell. I think of those dystopian films, and it's kind of like, okay, it's like we're in the middle of one of those things, right?
Yeah.
But also it kind of dawns on me that we're impacted because these are happening in all of our communities, and they're happening to people that we know or people that we're just kind of getting associated with. One of the things that struck me was one of the gentlemen, an African-American gentleman, talked about neighbors, Venezuelan neighbors that he had gotten to know that were friends. He talked about using an app to,
right,
translation app so that they could talk and communicate. And he's like, he wakes up one morning and they're all gone. And so he's impacted in that way. But I also think about the notion of this isn't just something that is happening to one select group. It's not just Mexicans. It's not just Venezuelans. You have a number of immigrants, communities in Chicago, Black immigrant communities, African immigrant communities as well, that are conceivably impacted by this.
Yeah.
And so each
nobody's exempt.
Yeah. Each one of these occurrences is a reminder for us about that.
And while I have you here, Alden, why don't you tell us what stories your team is working on?
Sure. The data team is working on a number of things, and we've actually got a couple things that are going to be coming up. So there's this one, there's an investigative story that we've got coming out, and so I can't say too much about it just yet.
Okay.
But it involves a public official, as they often do, and connections with a number of firms that have gotten very large contracts ever since that public official joined the board, the governing board of the agency that they serve. And so we're going to highlight that and ask some questions just to make sure everything's on the up and up, but also raising questions around whether this is the optics of this is something that people should be comfortable with. So that's one thing we've got coming. And then we've got another story. It's part of what we've kind of in-house called our Who Owns Chicago, a collection of stories looking at lack of affordability in rental and the growth of corporate ownership of rental property in Chicago. We're going to be focusing on one far south side development, the very wealthy corporate owner of that development, and the very harsh conditions of the low income publicly subsidized development that they live in. And really try to get some accountability questions there, but also document some of the troubles those residents have been having.
Well, we look forward to it. Sounds good. Thank you, Alden.
Thank you.
That's WBEZ senior editor Alden Lowry. I also talked with WTTW News correspondent Nick Blumberg and Block Club Chicago reporter Mac Lederman. Let's get into the weekly news recap with the full panel. So let's start with the continuing immigration arrests and protests. Now, Mac, you have been covering this all week, and we saw, of course, activity on the south side, including a raid at a South Shore apartment building. Talk to us. What happened there, and how many people were arrested in this?
So ever since Operation Midway Blitz has been underway, this is what DHS and ICE officials call the largest single raid so far since this escalation 3 weeks ago. Neighbors described a very dramatic scene, something maybe out of a movie, involving a helicopter, a black helicopter, swirling over the entire thing. Agents coming off onto the roof, people coming out, agents coming out of unmarked vans, U-Haul vans actually, budget rental vans,
right,
in droves of long guns, going in and knocking down doors throughout the entire building. Residents described people being zip-tied and led into vans outside. The people who appeared to be Hispanic were led into one vans, and people who were not were led into other vans. Mm-hmm. Many of these people were woken up, some of them barely dressed or not dressed at all. And 37 people, according to DHS, were ultimately taken away. And we just have reports this morning that includes four children
wow,
who are U.S. citizens.
Yeah, Alden and Nick, I mean, this I think had to be pretty shocking for residents at those hours in the morning. As Mac mentioned, you know, people getting separated. You had black residents in one van and, you know, Hispanic residents in another. Your thoughts, Alden?
Yeah, it sounds like a very harrowing experience. And that is really a threat through a lot of immigration enforcement, particularly with this administration. You have people who are afraid to take the kids to school. You have people who are afraid to show up for work. You have people who are afraid to frequent the places that they like to frequent. So the fear is definitely a very strong element of what's been happening here.
Yeah, what comes to mind, Nick? Yeah,
I mean, you have to imagine that the shock and awe is part of the intention here. You know, they could have easily approached this building without rappelling down from a helicopter. But, you know, that makes sort of these dramatic scenes that we have seen, you know, federal immigration authorities, you know, they seem to be thriving on to make these dramatic, you know, detentions and these dramatic, you know, entrances into a situation. And we're seeing this all, you know, get posted online. Obviously, they're getting a ton of media coverage.
Yeah. Speaking of posted online, you and I were talking, the Department of Homeland Security shared video of raids on social media. It looks like the South Shore one is front and center. And it definitely looks like something that's ready for a reality TV, right? Slow motion,
right.
Music, like, going on here?
I almost thought it looks like something that would be put together by like an influencer, you know, you know, someone on, you know, TikTok or Instagram. So to see that come from the federal government, it's still just so jarring. We've seen, you know, and obviously President Trump has shared, you know, many images, sort of AI crafted images of himself. There was one recently, I think last night, you know, talking about all the budget cuts and, you know, the layoffs that they want to do during the government shutdown. And he was sort of dressed as the Grim Reaper. So it's this very unusual way of communicating that we see from this administration. I know we're all tired of saying unprecedented, but to see this sort of reality show influencer style video of, you know, what are very, you know, serious, you know, arrests and detentions and, you know, sort of militarized actions being played to the cameras.
Mac, you also covered a raid outside a homeless shelter a few miles north in Bronzeville. What happened there?
So we just got to the scene maybe 20 minutes after these agents left. A pastor was streaming on Facebook Live as 7 to 8 vans of ICE agents, Border Patrol agents in camouflage came out and ran up and chased down people who were just hanging out outside this homeless shelter. They told me that these were residents, that 4 people were taken away. They eventually chased down and interrogated 5 of them. 2 of these people presented papers that they were seeking asylum, but 1 of the 2 was taken anyway. This was quite the jarring scene for the people there at the shelter. They said the residents of this is a 260 unit homeless shelter were all pressed up against the window watching this whole thing unfold. They said that they're going to give trauma-informed services to everyone in the building, but this has really, you know, rattled their community.
My goodness, I can only imagine. And Alden and Nick, this is coming after federal agents detained and then released 2 people outside a homeless shelter in North Park last week. Your thoughts on this leaving perhaps vulnerable people just afraid to go to shelters now, Nick?
Well, yeah, I mean, we have people that are, you know, truly in the most dire, you know, of circumstances that have great needs. And, you know, now they can, as you mentioned, you know, there's going to be this fear, there's going to be this anxiety. If they are in a congregate setting like that, does that make them some sort of a target? And, you know, people just talking about that South Shore building, you know, people in their own homes, people in the, you know, the places where they're staying, where they're seeking shelter, that they have to question, you know, can they even feel like they are, you know, free from any sort of an intervention from federal authorities there? And, you know, it's sort of, again, with this administration's pattern of norm breaking, you know, we typically think of places like, you know, like a church, like a homeless shelter, like where someone is, you know, a medical facility where people are receiving services, where people have some sort of a need that they're trying to meet, as being free from, you know, sort of intervention or you know, incursion.
You know, possibly a safe space.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, the other concern that some have expressed is places where people really need to go in order to get assistance. So you have people who are unhoused. Mm-hmm. A shelter is certainly perhaps the most needed resource that needs to be available to them. But the fear is so strong that folks may jeopardize getting what they really need to avoid persecution from ICE.
I'll just add a quote I used as the kicker in the story, Alden, was from one of the shelter organizers who told me their whole goal was to create a safe space for people. And, you know, what unfolded was quite the opposite.
Now, let's pivot from immigration raids to protests. The detention facility in West Suburban Broadview, that's been the epicenter of the protests and the tension here. Mac, what have you been hearing and seeing?
So we've had reporters on the ground there every Friday, which has kind of been the peak action for these protests. And they've escalated over time over the last couple weeks. We've seen just truly chaotic scenes of agents indiscriminately firing pepper balls at the crowd. That includes reporters and camera people on the scene. They're using tear gas and white smoke to push back crowds, so much so that these protesters have showed up in gas masks and pouring water into people's eyes. We've seen scenes of people being arrested and taken away inside the detention facility. Out there today, we have our reporter, Charles Frush, who says that state police have already put up this is going to be a new designated protest area. As we know in the past about protesters, they don't like being told exactly where to go. We saw that outside the DNC. So whether that works or not, we'll let that be seen. But ever since it started this morning, Charles is already reporting two arrests by state cops who are kind of monitoring this protest area outside.
Yeah, so some of the protesters have been arrested, right? What are federal agents charging them with exactly?
So we found so far in federal court documents five active cases brought by federal agents who claim to have witnessed actions or assaults by protesters against agents. These agents who were the quote-unquote victims in documents are saying that they were yelled explicit at, that they were had their arms hit. In one case, a man wrestled with an agent to the ground and then opened his helmet, leading to pepper spray getting into his eyes, too. So these charges, they're very thin on the details. Many of these protesters have been released by judges pending their trial. So we'll see how those things unfold. But if you ask, you know, lawyers, guilds, lawyer observers who were there on the scene, it's the agents themselves who are real aggressors, not the protesters. So just another example of, you know, Trump officials really just trying to throw anything they can at the wall of the legal system.
And, you know, Alden, when I think about all of this that we've been discussing, right, helicopters dropping agents onto the roof of a South Shore apartment building, tear gas, pepper spray, rubber pellets being used against protesters. I mean, does it seem clear that there's just been this escalation in tactics that are being used by the federal government?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the rationale might be. The notion is perhaps a very firm hand in response to people protesting. As someone who is watching this unfold, I think it's very reasonable for people to say, I can understand there needing to be a reaction to the protest, but what we're seeing is certainly seems to be excessive.
Yeah. Our colleagues, Adriana Cardona-Magigad and Lauren Fitzpatrick, they've pulled back the curtain on what is going on inside the Broadview processing facility, and it's not good, right? We're hearing stories here from detainees or former detainees talking about how crowded it was inside and the fact that, you know, the building is at capacity, but officials keep bringing more folks in, and they're sleeping on cold floors, and they're taking no showers. They're using toilets that are just out in the open, and just extremely unsanitary. One said, quote, gross. Yeah. Conditions. Your reaction to that? I mean, are we surprised? They're going in the hundreds inside.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things to keep in mind with the Broadview facility is it's not meant to be a detention center. It's literally meant to be a processing center. Folks are supposed to be there, I think, up to 12 hours. And then gone to someplace else. Back in June, the administration expanded that limit to I think, 3 days. But we looked at data that showed that people have been exceeding that even up until now.
Wow.
At very large percentages. So there's certainly a problem in terms of and there's more activity happening now than there was back in June or July, which was the latest that we saw that data.
Yeah.
So you have that exacerbating the fact that you were keeping people for long periods of time. There's no food. There's no facilities there for people to use the bathroom. I think one of the things that Adriana in our story,
Lauren.
And Lauren, thank you, described was there were women who, detainees, who said they were literally forming like a human wall.
Yes.
So that other women could use the facilities without being seen. So there's certainly more people there than designed, and it's creating incredible harsh conditions.
Yes, I'm talking, Nick, about, you know, just they gave us cold bread, and sometimes they'd give us water.
Exactly.
To wash it down.
Well, and yeah, I mean, this is all, you know, goes back to the idea of the administration had, you know, these plans. plans in place for this massive surge of immigration enforcement. But do you know, this is already an immigration system that was stretched thin, that didn't have enough judges, that didn't have the kinds of facilities that, you know, even stricter enforcement advocates thought that the system, you know, of immigration enforcement needed. So now you add on top of that, that there is just this massive wave of agents hitting the streets across the country, you know, detaining and, you know, attempting to deport people, that the system is not built for this kind of a thing. And this, you know, this was an issue that we saw during the first Trump administration, particularly around issues of family separation and the way that children were being cared for, that there were not adequate facilities or resources there. So this is a pattern that we see, you know, occurring again.
And as we were talking about, Mac, you know, outside protests continue on the Fridays. We've got Cindy Hernandez from the Sun-Times is there now. You've got your colleagues from Block Club. And journalists are just getting caught up in the chaos, wouldn't you say, outside while covering this situation in Broadview?
There's one incident involving a CBS News reporter who has shown video and also photo proof that a pepper ball was fired at their vehicle as they went by the Broadview facility during a time to check to see if there was protesters there. There weren't, so they were preparing to leave. At that time, a pepper ball was shot inside the vehicle, and it led to her puking for several hours, she said.
Jeez.
We went and we asked ICE agents about what happened, and they pretty much flat out deny that this incident happened at all. They say that an unmarked Ford Bronco approached the front of the facility and refused to leave, which is a very different report than the CBS News reporter is giving. And now the Broadview Police Department, where this facility is located, says they're now launching a criminal investigation against the agents. And it's not just one case, it's three criminal investigations they're launching about agent behavior towards protesters and reporters.
I think the mayor spoke up, mayor of Broadview, saying, you know, at this point, like, you're waging war in my community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she essentially said, you know, we don't want this kind of action. We don't want you here. And of course, this is having, you know, follow-on effects from all the, you know, the residents and the businesses around this facility. Obviously, we saw Broadview, you know, emergency officials, you know, really pushing back on this, you know, hastily erected fencing outside the facility, saying, you know, we can't get, you know, police and fire and EMS through here if there's an emergency. This is not authorized. You need to take this down. So clearly, you know, it's not just this facility. It's this community itself that's being affected.
Let's continue with the Trump administration's impact on us here in Illinois. It's day three of the federal government shutdown. What else does this shutdown mean for us here in Illinois, Alden?
153,000 people answered census surveys saying that they work for the federal government. Who among that population might be impacted by this is still somewhat unclear. There's word that the administration might at least announce as early as today some very specifics about, you know, kind of job categories or agencies where there will be not only furloughs but layoffs. So we might get a little clearer picture on who might be impacted. But generally speaking, we know that there are some areas that are that we can, you know, expect some level of an impact. So the last time we had a government shutdown, TSA in particular was impacted when the furlough started there. People started calling off, and that certainly had an impact on people at airports. It's been reported that some elements of veterans services, counseling and things of that nature, career counseling and other things like that, but not necessarily health, will be impacted. Mm-hmm. There could be a slowdown in some other offices as offices are shut down.
Some offices also just kind of waiting to see how long this goes, because it's like they've got the funding,
for now.
But in a couple of weeks of this.
One area that we know is supposed to be completely devoid of any kind of impact due to the shutdown is the Postal Service, which is essentially a separate entity. So that's what we know so far, but we maybe get some more details.
I'll add too that ICE Border Patrol agents considered essential workers not impacted by any government shutdown.
Okay. How have Illinois politicians responded, Nick?
Well, you've seen a lot of the political leaders, you know, this is sort of the continuing theme that they've been pushing back on the Trump administration, that, you know, these are folks who are here to sort of upend the normal administration of government, that they're here to, you know, create chaos. We've seen, you know, Illinois Democratic leaders from Governor Pritzker on down, you know, really slamming the Trump administration, particularly for, you know, the impact that it's going to have on federal workers, you know, raising concerns about whether there will be attempts to lay off some of those federal workers in addition to just, you know, putting furloughs in place, and really talking about, you know, the economic pain that this can create for folks. So, you know, it's the sort of messaging that has come to feel fairly standard, you know, but obviously they want this to be, you know, Democrats across the country want this to be something that is seen as squarely falling in the lap of Republicans, that this is not, you know, and talking as well about sort of these healthcare subsidies that Democrats have been pushing for. You know, we've heard local folks talking about the impact on people if their, you know, their Obamacare premiums go, you know, massively sky high without these.
Yeah. We also got word this morning. The Trump administration is pausing more than $2 billion in infrastructure funding for Chicago, in part to put pressure on Democrats during the shutdown. So this could affect the long-planned extension of the red line that we've talked about plenty of times on our air. What else do we know, Alden?
We know that this would also impact broader modernization work for the red and purple lines, things that kind of can help clear up some of the jams that happen with some of the trains that run on those lines.
Yeah.
It's been speculated that, or it's been reported, the administration has come right out and said they're going after Chicago in this way because of race-based contracting, which was part of what was uttered, I believe, with regard to a similar move made with New York. They were holding like $18 billion from New York for that purpose. And there's speculation that that's also politically motivated. The notion is, you know, go after the money in New York to maybe pressure Chuck Schumer, and maybe, you know, Illinois, Chicago, and there might be some others to come where they're trying to put pressure on Democrats.
Wow.
The Republicans have come out and said they're just a few. I think there was an appeal for, you know, just a handful of Democrats to come over in the Senate to help them get through the funding measure to end the shutdown.
Yeah.
And so maybe this is a leverage point that they're trying to
exercise.
Race-based
contracting.
Well, and of course, the fatal flaw in that argument is that under previous federal rules, they were supposed to take, you know, these sort of, you know, disadvantaged businesses, you know, either minority or women owned businesses into account in their contracting and who the, you know, when you get all these federal transit grants, you have to say, okay, X percent will go to, you know, a contracting firm that, you know, is considered a disadvantaged business. So,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, well, we've executed this funding agreement. It's already in place. It should be legally binding. And it was executed under the rules that we, you know, applied for at the time, and we were granted this money. So, you know, the Trump administration has said all sorts of things about, you know, wanting to make sure that they have these kind of car forward policies with their transportation funding, that they don't want anything that takes, you know, race or other factors into consideration. But under the terms of this, you know, agreement, that was in place already.
Geez. On Wednesday, the Energy Department also canceled $7.5 billion in funding for hundreds of projects, mostly in blue states. Now, after weeks of warnings, we heard this week finally that federal troops will be deployed to Chicago. What else should we know, Nick?
Well, this is about a memo from the Department of Homeland Security that was sent to the Department of Defense requesting 100 troops. Governor Pritzker said the Illinois National Guard was able to obtain this memo, which was how he got the information. And the idea here is that these troops would be protecting, you know, ICE agents and facilities. Of course, as you know, a lot of folks have discussed, the federal government should not be able to, you know, send in, you know, troops to, you know, to a city or a state unless they're requested, unless there's an emergency, or unless they are there to you know, sort of protect federal assets. So that seems to be the justification here. You know, and obviously we've been talking a lot about also, you know, the government pursuing charges against folks they say are endangering ICE agents.
But you know, wants to use cities like this as a so-called training ground.
Yes, exactly. Which we heard in that speech at that very unprecedented meeting of, you know, generals and admirals called in from across the globe at very short notice. But, you know, the question here is this going to be, they're going to attempt to federalize Illinois National Guardsmen? Are they going to bring people in from other states? Is there going to be some other mechanism? So, you know, we have this idea that 100 troops are on the way imminently, but we don't have a lot of details about where they'll be coming from or where they will be deployed.
Yeah. And while patrolling downtown with his agents last weekend, Alden, Gregory Bovino, who's the commander at large of the U.S. Border Force, he told WBEZ's Chip Mitchell just how his team is deciding who they're going to arrest. What'd he say?
Oh, he said, I'm sorry, I thought there was going to be a clip play there. he said that his agents, Chip asked him specifically about one man who ran and he was apprehended by several Border Patrol agents. And his question was this person, did you go after this person because they ran? And he said, no, we go after people based on articulable facts of the situation, intelligence that they have, agent experience. And he elaborated, we also consider, you know, what they look like, mm-hmm. You know, and how they look compared to
other people like you.
What's your name? Chip. And
for context, Chip is a middle-aged white man.
White man, right. And so he talked about how their appearance is a factor in how they assess whether someone should be apprehended or not.
Yeah.
He said it very clearly.
Let's hear how Governor Pritzker is reacting to that.
They're not targeting violent criminals or gang members. They're arresting tamale vendors and delivery men and shaking down families. Donald Trump and Kristi Noem and Tom Homan said they were targeting the worst of the worst criminals. They lied, and they continue to lie. 60% of the individuals that ICE has taken in Illinois this year have no criminal convictions of any kind.
Your thoughts, Mac? I mean, and also, I mean, anyone think the governor has power to stop this?
Well, I mean, what he said, the facts point to that based on the reporting. The man who was killed in the ICE stop in Franklin Park, that's been all over national news. He had a series of traffic tickets, but no criminal record and no traffic ticket over the last 12 years. Apparently, he was dropping his children off at school before this fatal interaction with ICE officers. We have federal court records that show that people who are being detained for reentry in the country have committed no other crime unless you consider coming back into the United States that way is a crime itself. So, yeah, a lot of people wrapped up into this, Sasha, mm-hmm. women, children, and people that aren't the quote-unquote worst of the worst, as they say they are.
Right. Nick, Illinois' Attorney General Kwame Raoul, he's saying, I will take action if the troops do end up here in Chicago.
That's right. I mean, he is ready to make this the latest in a long line of lawsuits.
Let me guess, he's suing?
Yes, indeed. He is ready for court action. I do not have the count handy or off the top of my head, but...
It's a lot.
It's a lot. You know, trying to prevent, you know, things like funding clawbacks, all sorts of moves that the AG has been making. Now, what he said is, you know, he can't really file suit until the troops actually arrive, should they arrive, because, of course, we've been talking about this for weeks. The president's been threatening it for weeks and months, and it has yet to materialize. So we should, you know, say we don't have reports that they are here yet or have any details on that. But Raoul says he is ready to, you know, go to court. This is something we also saw court action in Los Angeles when mm-hmm. troops were deployed there. The state of Oregon and the city of Portland are pushing back in court on, you know, federal troops coming in. So Raoul is ready to make the case.
Let's hear how Mayor Johnson is talking about this all. He voiced his objections to the immigration arrests as well.
They made a little girl act as a translator as they took her family into custody. These are heartbreaking scenes that have nothing to do with making our city safer.
Does our mayor have any ability to limit these federal immigration arrests?
I mean, not much beyond, you know, making sure that Chicago police are following the city's existing sanctuary law, that they are not cooperating with federal officials unless they have, you know, a judicial warrant for someone's arrest. But, you know, that they're fairly limited. I mean, again, the city of Chicago could join, you know, the state of Illinois in taking legal action should troops arrive or should they believe there are some sort of, you know, other violations of the law here. But,
right.
you know, this is another instance where, you know, as with Pritzker, Pritzker, Raoul, Johnson, they have actions they can take, but, you know, they are somewhat hamstrung.
Mm-hmm.
And the raid at the South Shore building, Sasha, Chicago police on hand at corners of the building. This whole thing unfolded. I asked CPD about why they were there. They said that federal authorities alerted them of a man that they took who had an outstanding local criminal warrant. So they went there to arrest him. But quite the picture there that the sanctuary laws are not allowed to get actively involved, but just sitting there on the scene as this entire massive raid is unfolding.
Kind of looks like everybody's all together here, right? Cook County Public Defenders, Alden, they're stepping in. They stepped into the group chat. What are they trying to do?
They're trying to get Chief Judge Tim Evans essentially to issue an order that would bar federal officials or federal agents from making arrests at in or near courthouses. And there have been at least three such arrests over the past few weeks, including one at a domestic violence court, which raised other concerns. But the notion is they're saying that people shouldn't have to choose between the threat of deportation and then actually appearing in court. And if you don't appear in court, then that can certainly lead to legal problems. So they're trying to get they're petitioning Chief Judge Evans to issue some type of order that would bar that kind of any arrest that did not involve a warrant.
There's also a class action lawsuit right now looking to end arrests at courtrooms. They say this deters people from showing up and going for the actual legal process. To get documentation, they're actually doing the right thing, you know, Sasha, by coming up to court when they're supposed to, only to be taken away and having no idea it's happening. So
and worth noting, this is a civil offense, right? Not criminal.
Well, and this also goes to the justifications that you hear for why there should be, you know, sanctuary policies in place, because they say, you know, if someone is the victim of a crime or the witness to a crime or has information that would be valuable to law enforcement, bringing their immigration status into it, you know, sort of hamstrings the regular functioning of law enforcement. This is kind of another example of the court system not functioning properly.
And again, particularly with regard to domestic violence court, you've got people who are victims themselves and they're trying to get that process started, whether it's a order of protection or something else. But if they're afraid to show up because they fear they may be entangled with ICE agents, then they could be putting themselves in danger as a result.
So conflict within Illinois' community this week over the Archdiocese honoring Senator Dick Durbin. What is the controversy here?
Well, the church was considering Dick Durbin for a Lifetime Achievement Award, particularly for his work around immigration issues. But there's been a lot of pushback, even from the leader of the senator's home area there within the church, and who said that he was unfit for any kind of honor from the Catholic Church because Durbin is pro-choice. And as you know, the Catholic Church, is very adamant with regard to its pro-life stance. Mm-hmm. So there's been a ton of pushback. Ultimately, the senator decided to forego the award, but Pope Leo, I thought, offered some very interesting comments, asking for civility with all of this. But he also pointed out some other kind of, with regard to pro-life, pro-choice.
Yeah.
He talked about, you know, a lot of people who are pro-lifers rail against abortion, but they are adamantly in favor of the death penalty.
Yeah, let's hear from Pope Leo.
It's important to look at many issues that are related to what is the teaching of the church. Someone who says I'm against abortion but says I'm in favor of the death penalty is not really pro-life. So someone who says that I'm against abortion but I'm in agreement with the inhuman treatment of immigrants who are in the United States, I don't know if that's pro-life. So they're very complex issues. I don't know if anyone has all the truth on them.
So how bold of a comment and position do you think that is, Nick?
Well, I think it's sort of continuing in the more progressive tradition of Pope Leo's, you know, predecessor Francis. And it also lines up with, you know, what a lot of practicing Catholics actually believe. You know, many folks have much more lenient views on, you know, things like birth control or abortion than the church's leadership and official teachings. So I think this is sort of a recognition that, you know, maybe not a recognition, but a reflection of the fact that there is a sort of a diverse set of viewpoints, you know, even among Catholics. But yeah, I mean, this has been an issue for years that, you know, the bishop of, you know, of Durbin's home diocese, you know, doesn't want to offer him communion.
Yeah.
You know, that people say that he's not a real Catholic. A lot of Catholic politicians have faced this. Joe Biden faced this, you know, and, you know, what you hear from them is that they're not pro-abortion. They would like it to be available in circumstances where it's absolutely necessary. But I think, you know, Pope Leo trying to put that sort of, you know, humanistic message front and center, saying that, like, well, do you value the human life over the course of its life? And mm-hmm. are these people being well treated?
And how is Durbin handling all of this, Alden? He's just like, I'm not accepting the award.
Yeah. And let's move on.
Yeah. So. As he should. But speaking of Pope Leo, I mean, we know he's a Sox fan. We know he's a Sox fan, but we're going to have to focus on the Cubs instead because they're advancing in the postseason for the first time since 2017. Now, Mac, I know I don't know if you were there, but I know you watched. Mm-hmm. So give us some of the highlights from yesterday's final wild card game against the Padres.
Well, first of all, Sasha, do you know the song? Do you want to sing it with me?
Go Cubs, go.
Go Cubs, go.
Oh, my
God. I can't believe
hey, I'm
doing
Chicago,
this.
What do you say? Cubs are going to win today. And they did. They won today. Well, they won yesterday. But they took the Padres to 3 games. They won the first, lost the second, set up this crucial final game 3 before advancing on. They're going to play the Milwaukee Brewers, who ran away with their division in the second half of the season. They won 14 straight games.
I'm
and
so
had the
lost.
Best
I thought they were
going to
play Toronto.
Yankees are going to play Toronto.
Okay, you're Canadian bias.
That's like the only thing I heard in a newscast earlier this morning. I heard Toronto mentioned. I was like, yay, Blue Jays. Oh, so they don't have anything to do with the Cubs?
No, they're in the American League. But
maybe a World Series.
Maybe one day.
All right, go ahead, Matt.
They're in the playoffs still.
Yeah.
So the Cubs put up 3 runs early. It got a little hairy at the end. They gave the ball to a guy who was actually cut by the White Sox last season to get the final 6 outs. He couldn't do it. He put on 2 runners in a row in the 9th inning, hit 2 in a row. And then the Cubs, they brought on another guy who came in and finally shut the door. And I think in a good twist of fate, the person who caught the last out was Pete Crow Armstrong, who came out of a slump and had 2 hits. So good signs point to the Cubs, good vibes in Wrigley on the north side of Chicago
good
for
vibes
baseball fans.
Yeah,
his hitting had really been struggling the first 2 games, so it was nice to see. I saw you said Pope Leo in that little segue, in that pivot, as we're saying.
Who is a Sox fan?
I saw a t-shirt last night that said, if Pope Leo has to be a Sox fan, at least he's not a Cardinal. And I got a kick out of it. I appreciate it.
Like
you get a little
that.
Catholic humor, you get a little baseball rivalry humor.
A little Catholic humor.
Mac, sounds like you should be covering the Cubs.
I know, Mac, that was a really good breakdown.
Yeah, where's the Block Club you. Sports Desk. Are they listening?
I can do a pitch-by-pitch breakdown if you want that.
Yeah, please.
How much time do we have left?
Go. I've got about another minute that I can give you because it's fascinating. Go Cubs go. So when do they play again?
Oh, I think Saturday.
They're playing Saturday.
Oh, this weekend.
Yeah, right? Saturday
oh.
In Milwaukee. Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see because, you know, Milwaukee can be a little shaky in the postseason. And, you know, the former Milwaukee manager, Craig Counsell, is now managing the Northsiders. So although he did oversee some of those playoff collapses, but he's also somebody who knows the Brewers about as well as anybody.
So WBEZ's Lisa Lobb is filling us in here. They do play tomorrow at 1:08 against Milwaukee. She also mentions the 8 heart attacks that she got in yesterday's game.
Yeah, sounds about right.
I have people who looked at tickets, Sasha. I think $200+ to get in the door. If you want to take the train up to Milwaukee, that might have changed.
No,
that's
thanks.
Not bad. That's
I've got
not
a
bad.
TV at home. Looks like we might have some record-breaking or at least record-matching heat this weekend. Saturday could hit, 89 to 90 degrees, coming close to the record of 90 degrees back in 1951. And Sunday is expected to hit about 88 degrees, which could match a record set in 1997. I'm excited about this, but I have a feeling that a lot of people listening to me right now are like,
yeah.
It's fall, we're tired of this. How are you all going to enjoy these last hot days? Because we know the temperatures are going to start falling soon.
Well, ironically, I'm supposed to go to apple picking and pumpkin patch tomorrow. And I'm like, yeah, I think I'm going to forego the flannel.
That couldn't be more fall.
Uh-huh. So I'm just going to pretend that everything is fine. And this is what the weather is supposed to be in October.
And you're going to the beach?
I am going to the beach.
Yes.
All right. Yes. This weekend, my final trip of the year.
Why do I feel like you're lying?
I'm not lying.
You're going to the beach
I'm
for real?
I'm going to the beach, yes.
Okay,
October
good
on the beach. Yeah,
that's fantastic. Love that for you. And Mac, you're going to the baseball game.
No, but I'm very I'm very happy about this because actually, if you saw me 3 days ago, I was wearing a walking boot. I tore my calf playing pickup basketball.
No.
You pick up basketball as you get older, not the best idea. But I missed like 4 or 5 weeks of the summer. So now I get our third summer of the year so far at this point. I'm excited to actually enjoy it.
Third summer of the year. That's so not Chicago.
Yeah, we're usually talking about third winter, not third summer.
Yeah, no, I have no idea what I'm doing this weekend. I'm now thinking I should probably go find a beach like Alden.
Yeah, you might have a 2 hour window when it's going to be 80, whatever. But then once the weather starts dropping, you need to get out.
Yeah, no, yeah. I definitely need to do something. I'm doing The Lion King tonight, but that's indoors. I'm like, maybe I'll just wear like a crop top or something just in solidarity with
find
the sunshine.
A nice patio to eat dinner at beforehand or something.
And I'm kidding. I'm not wearing a crop top to The Lion King.
I would support you. I like your fashion choices.
Yeah, just say, look outside, folks. It's summer. What are you talking about?
So are we done now?
We'll leave it there. That's it for the weekly news recap. My thanks to WBEZ's Alden Lowry, WTTW's Nick Blomberg, and Mac Lederman of Block Club Chicago.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guthman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/InTheLoop. Thanks for listening.